This is Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Well, it is a new year, a new beginning for some, a continuation of old behaviors for others, and a mismatch of all of that in between, everything from trying to make small shifts to bigger shifts. And through all of that process, our emotional state is definitely part of that. So today we are hoping we could touch base and look at how we process our emotions through the shifting, changing times entering into 2025, and how we sit with maybe some of those more difficult emotions and use those as tools for our own healing and purposeful growth. I'm just going to jump right in here to this topic with a question for you, LaShawn. And I want to start with where I ended in terms of, you know, sitting with difficult feelings and how one can do that without getting pulled into that too much, but also being able to acknowledge and not try to suppress those feelings as well. So, LaShawn, I would love your coaching expertise on that topic.
I'd be happy to share what I know. And it's also, I think as coaches, we also work with other coaches and in other healing modalities as well. And I'm pulling from other healing modalities that I have learned. You too, Erin, with Family Constellations. And also, I will be looking at how we look at this from the perspective of positive intelligence. And I've also been doing some work with an embodiment coach, and I've learned a lot about compassionate observation when it comes to getting to know our bodies. And in this embodiment coaching that I've been doing for the past month and a half, I have learned how to just accept what's happening in my body or what I'm observing in my body and not trying to change it. And I think that has been powerful for me in my healing process. It has taught me how to allow things to be. And that is something that I knew intellectually, but it wasn't until I started practicing this art of observing with compassion, love, and appreciation. And the important part of that is not trying to change it. My experience has been that when I observe something I judge, and this goes into a little bit about positive intelligence, when our judge shows up and decides that a feeling is bad, my strategy is to fix it. And I have learned in this embodiment coaching that I've been doing to just watch it. And this comes back to something that we have talked about a lot, Erin, in our episodes, curiosity, because curiosity is the antidote to judgment. And if we can shift that awareness, we are aware that there is something unpleasant or something that's, you know, requires our attention. And the judge in positive intelligence, your inner critic, might say, this is bad, we need to fix it. But we can just observe this feeling and get curious about it. Like, how is it showing up? Where do I feel it in my body? Like, if we take that stance of curiosity, I have found that it lightens the experience. It makes it easier for me. I'm going to speak for myself. It's easier for me to coexist with that experience. And really just, it shifts the experience for me in terms of it being something that's bad and wrong and needs to change. And then, of course, my judge just has a field day if I don't catch it in time. All of the bad and wrong things that it could indicate. And then I get into this negative spiral. And I think this is something that can happen when we are trying to run away from that experience or that feeling, when we can learn a lot from our difficult emotions. We can learn a lot from ambiguity. We can learn a lot from discomfort. And that's one thing that I have learned with that. And then, of course, with like Family Constellations, one thing that we learn in that healing modality and that Kyla talked about when we interviewed her at the beginning of this season, she talked about, you know, putting things in the middle, having a place for things that might be too big for you to carry on your own or that you shouldn't even be carrying. And that, I think there's that too, giving yourself a place or a way to lighten that load for yourself by saying, oh, I'm going to give this to my ancestors. I'm going to give this to my past, or I'm going to give this to the middle. That's another thing that we do in family constellations. And just, you know, giving yourself grace, compassion, and allowing yourself to be curious about whatever it is that's showing up. Erin, any thoughts?
Well, I love where you started with curiosity, and that is always one of the key words that we probably have had in, what, 90%, I don't know for sure, but many of our episodes. And I think it is such a powerful word, because for me, that word can be a state of being. It can be an action. It can just be this mantra that I can always hold space for that really is helpful to me. So I appreciate you including that. The other thing about putting stuff in the middle that you talked about with family constellations, I think that's so powerful, because a lot of these big feelings, you know, we're feeling on our own internally, but they're also collectively felt as well. We can feel what other people are feeling as a way of empathy and compassion. And then that can also turn into something that may not feel so compassionate, where we take on emotions that are bigger than us and too much for us. And so that idea of putting things in the middle that you spoke to, Lisanne, and that Kyla had brought to our podcast earlier on in the season, I think is so important when we think about sitting with our emotions. And then just this concept is always a process. We talked about connection being a process in our prior podcast episode, the one before this one. And I think that this learning how to sit with our emotions is always a process, and it's going to have a lot of messiness with it. And so when we're just starting out and really trying to understand what does that mean to sit with our emotions, that's such a big question. And I love that you brought up ambiguity and these kind of more challenging feelings or spaces that we might hold. And being able to sit with those means being able to allow whatever needs to come in from that as a signal or a learning tool potentially, without it dragging us under into deeper despair or depression. And I know that is part of the trial process, at least in my own experience of, you know, how can you hold things tenderly when they may be very uncomfortable, rather than completely turning them inward into the spiral of a lot of pain. And so I think one of the key pieces going into 2025 for our listeners, hopefully, and you know, for myself and in particular, is knowing when those more challenging emotions, how I am using them as a tool for compassion for myself and for others. And when I am not, being much more curious about what is going on and how I can intercept anything that leads to a feeling that maybe is not necessarily needed during that time or situation. And I understand there are some really big feelings and things that are part of some grief processes, for instance, that are unavoidable. And so I'm not necessarily specifically talking about grief here. I'm just talking about, in general, when we hear in the self-help world, when we hear ourselves talking about sitting with our emotions, what does that even mean, and what comes up for me personally? So just to summarize, for me, it's about being able to feel the challenging emotions without having them fully drag me under into a depression that might last, you know, beyond that day or something like that. LaShawn, what else do you want to add here?
I like your what you said about, you know, defining what it means to sit with your feelings or sit with your emotions. I think that's really important to have an idea of what that looks like, because it goes back to the buzzwords that we talked about in a previous episode, where we were talking about these buzzwords that we come across in the self-help industry and how that can be really confusing and seem like nonsense to someone who's not in the industry or who isn't, you know, reading those books or doing that kind of thing or is not familiar with self or personal development. And I think defining what that means to you personally, a person on an individual level, what does it mean to sit with your emotions? Because I want to say that one thing that I've come across that has been a realization for me in my healing journey is intellectually, I understand what sitting with one's emotions is. However, in practice, I'm almost always running away from my emotions. I'm not sitting with them at all. I'm either seeking out comfort food, or I'm binge watching Netflix, or I'm doing something in response to these uncomfortable emotions, and I'm not sitting with them. So it's, I think it is a process to define what that looks like for you. What is sitting with your feelings? What does it mean to feel your feelings? That's another phrase that comes up. Feel your feelings. What in the world does that mean? Because we do feel our feelings. I mean, and on some level, we do feel our feelings, but how do we do that? And one thing that has helped me recently is this visualization of imagining your emotions. Like when strong emotions come up, whether anger, frustration, worry, you know, those emotions that can overtake us, as you were saying, Erin, that can kind of spiral you into depression if you let it. I have that, you know, situation as well. But one thing that helps me is visualizing emotions as like a wave or something like that. Maybe a surge is another term, that it's rising within you. And if we are too quick to either trying to fix it or numb ourselves to it or find an antidote to it, it's more difficult, I think, to just observe it. And so for me, sitting with my emotions looks like recognizing that I am in a state of irritation or anger. And okay, I'm angry, frustrated. And then I'm going to step out. I'm going to imagine myself stepping out as if I'm on the shore on a beach and the wave is rising up and then it falls. And I'm going to watch it do that. And I'm going to allow that to happen before taking any action. And I find that when I do that, when I allow myself the pause that is required when those strong emotions are coming up, or even discomfort is another thing that I find difficult to sit with. So for me, sitting with an emotion is allowing for that ebb and flow, because I think it's really easy when you're in the throes of an emotion, if it's a big emotion like anger, fear, overwhelm, that can really swallow you up. And then if it swallows you up, then you're unable to see how it rises and falls because you're kind of enmeshed in it. It's you're not able to like see the ebb and flow of the emotion. And so I think that once we are aware that we are angry, we are uncomfortable, whatever, we can say, oh, I'm in our minds. We can, oh, I'm angry. Let's see where this anger is taking me. What does it feel like? How is it, you know, where does it show up in my body? And we take that time to experience the process of the emotion going through our body and our mind. Then we can take action when it goes down, like when it takes its course. So the course of the emotion, there we go. The course of the emotion, right? So it starts out as maybe a little irritation, and then it rises up into frustration or anger, and then it goes down to exhaustion or something like that. So again, I think it's important to be aware of those emotions, and then also, you know, going back to that curiosity, where is this going? What does this look like? What is the ebb and flow of this? Because if we can see emotions as a fleeting thing or something that comes and goes, even if it's coming and going in more than one way, there is a rhythm to our emotions and how they show up. And I think we can become, in positive intelligence, we have the fascinated anthropologist. We can become a fascinated scientist and observe, what does this emotion look like for me? What does that look like in my children? What does that look like in my colleagues? And just kind of observe it. And then I think having that space between ourselves and the emotion can help us sit with the emotion. So I do think that there's a certain distance involved with sitting with our emotion. And to go back to what you said, Erin, of that kind of fine line between, you know, sitting with your emotion and being kind of overtaken by your emotion. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, and you can clarify if I'm off the mark. But the way that I experience it is, if I don't allow myself the distance between whatever emotion I'm experiencing and, I don't know, on an intellectual level or maybe even spiritual, like kind of going outside of it, I just get caught up in it. It's like almost like drowning. I almost always, when I feel that overwhelm, it is for me akin to drowning. It's like I can't do anything. I feel really immobilized by it. And then it isn't until I realize, oh, I'm where I am. I become self-aware, and then I can put some distance, and then I can say that I'm sitting with the emotion rather than it kind of taking over. Any thoughts?
I like this idea of the course of the emotion and the ebb and flow, and it's something that can be released and we don't have to contain and hold on to. And that, going back to that point of like, at what point do we tend to it? At what point do we let it grow? At what point do we let it go? Those types of questions as we're sitting with our emotions, I think all come up. And as you were talking, it helped me to frame this a little bit differently in my mind too, that when we feel maybe some really big eruptive emotions, we might feel a sudden lash of anger, for example, and then often feel a lot of different other emotions as a result. And oftentimes they can be on a spectrum from like anger to hope. And so that can be both a bit of a relief, and it can also be a point of confusion because it's like, wow, I am feeling so many things that are so across the spectrum. Where do I even enter into tending to any of these? And so maybe I don't start with my anger in that example with the hopeful piece. Maybe there's something in between anger and hope that I tend to. Maybe there was a disappointment at one time, and that's really what's coming up for me. And so by really listening to myself and listening to my body, and I love that you're doing that embodiment coaching. That makes so much sense, especially with this practice of tending and sitting with our emotions. I think it can be really helpful, a helpful tool just to listen to what certain emotions are telling us to maybe get to more of the deeper emotions that we may be feeling or harboring about a situation or an individual or a circumstance. And I do like this idea of really then recognizing, okay, how do I tend to this? How do I, how does it need to grow? And how do I, do let it go? Those types of things. Again, I'm coming up with things in threes. It's, as you mentioned, it's something I do. I don't know why.
No,
But,
it's
but
good. I like the
applying
threes.
that, applying that to the new year here too, like with the changes, this is an opportunity to be more intentional too and more curious about New Year's resolutions or New Year's goals or the changes that are coming, politically or economically or whatever they may be. How do we ebb and flow or be buoyant with that tide of shifting sand as we learn to navigate these emotions that we're feeling? And then the other thing that has come up is trying, and I still don't frame this very well in my own mind, but trying to not say this is a negative emotion and this is a positive one, and just being very neutral about that. That is a place of growth for me as an individual significantly, because I automatically think of certain emotions as, oh, these are bad, or I shouldn't feel these, or that sort of thing. And the more that I do that, the more suppressed they get. And then obviously that's when you're going to lead to like a volcano, right? Like it's just going to explode eventually with some of those suppressed emotions as well. So if I could say one thing, I guess, to our listeners, it'd be not being afraid of those really big feelings that are typically labeled as negative, such as anger or madness or whatever they may be, because the best approach you can take is to sit with those, is to tend to them and really listen to them, and then find ways to let them go and move through them. So I guess when it comes down to it, there is space that we need to create in our lives to tend to our emotional life. How often do I, or do others, or even do you, Lashawn, tend to your emotional life versus how often do you tend to your thinking life? And then how often do you tend to your physical life? Well, physical is pretty automatic when we think of like eating or things like that, right? And movement potentially. And thinking that for me, you know, is definitely something that I tend to pretty overtly by reading or different thinking tasks that I do or the word puzzles that I do or things like that. But I don't tend to my emotions intentionally in the day like that. I don't take the time out of my day to say for 10 minutes, I'm going to read this chapter, which, you know, pertaining to my thinking. Yes, that can cross over to the emotional side too. But I guess as I'm thinking about this aloud, I'm not as intentional every single day about tending to my emotions. You know, physical health is a lot easier on some levels, mental or thinking, cognitive health, but emotional health, it's something I want to maybe now as I'm realizing this in the new year, try to be more intentional about it every day rather than when it's like, oh, I'm really feeling something big because those feelings are happening all the time. So yeah, LaShawn, do you have instances of tending to your emotions throughout the day that have worked really well, or what other insights would you like to share?
That's a really good point. And I would ask the question myself, how often do I intentionally examine my emotional experience or my emotional self? For the most part, I mean, my experience with emotions and really getting in touch with those emotions is I know that there are times when I ask myself, you know, how am I feeling in this moment? And often it has to do with maybe I feel anxious or something, like I'm noticing something and then I stop. But like you said, Erin, do I intentionally think to myself, well, let me think about my emotions? And I usually don't do that. And I think, I wonder what that would look like if I did incorporate intentional practice, looking at my emotions, examining my emotions, and learning about that. One of the things that I'm learning from working with an embodiment coach is how rarely I think about my body and what it's doing and how it is connected to my emotions, how it is connected to the relationships that I have with my, you know, people that are closest to me. And it's not until I take that time in my sessions with my embodiment coach that I am aware of it. And I have, and I use those practices in, you know, my day-to-day life as part of like the homework in between sessions, but also just as a way to make that a habit. And as we know, habits are things that are established through repetition, and we need to be intentional about it. And also we need to be consistent with this practice. And so one thing that comes to mind is to our listeners, looking into modalities that are used to examine emotions. There are different modalities that we use for intellectual exercise, for example, or for physical exercise, right? You know, like lifting weights or stretching or Pilates, yoga, that kind of thing. I would say yoga is a combination of physical and emotional, spiritual practices there. You could even combine. I would really encourage our listeners, and of course myself and Erin as well, to maybe get curious about what that looks like. And it's different for all of us. Each of us is going to respond to a different modality in a different way. Some people really respond to meditation, others do not. And that's okay. There are so many different modalities out there that can help us better understand our emotions. And, you know, there's so much information at our fingertips. And I think if we just do a search online on emotions, or we come across an article about, you know, emotional intelligence and other things, we can find ways to incorporate practices that are going to allow us to bring our emotions into our awareness more often. So it's not just when it happens, because one thing, you know, Erin, I'm sure you know as a coach, that it's great when we're able to become aware of a strong emotion when we're in the moment and it's happening. It's another thing, however, and powerful thing, if we can learn about how that emotion arises within us, what it does to us, how it affects us, so that when it happens, we have the tools we need to handle it or to process it in a way that's going to serve us, that's going to result in healing or connection or understanding, growth. So I think it's really important to be thinking about that on a regular basis and making it a habit. And in order to do that, we need to find practices that work for us, that allow us to be in the ease and flow of life, where it's not a chore, and it might even be enjoyable. Something we can do so that we are developing and honing our skill, our self-awareness, and our ability to recognize and sit with our emotions. Do you have any thoughts, Erin?
I just think that this is where coaching or counseling comes in to really help that person start to consider what might work best and to keep trying and have an accountability partner and then keep shifting and making changes, because typically the first plan is not going to work. Just as we talked about with connection and brought up here too today, this is a process and we are going to keep, you know, growing with this process, but there are times where we might be very stunted and not embody the practices that we're wanting to, or thought that we really understood ourselves and our emotions. And then like there's a new event or new something that happens that completely throws us out of equilibrium. And it's like, wait a second, I thought I knew this about myself. I thought I knew this is how it shows up for me. And now I'm realizing now it shows up for me a little bit differently too. So sticking through that process and recognizing that, you know, if you make the decision to continue with better understanding and sitting with your emotions as part of your New Year's habit building or resolution, recognize the purposeful journey and the process that that'll take as well. And I think that takes some pressure off of getting it right, because nobody's going to get it right. That's not getting something right to be out of the vocabulary when it comes to this, but it's just going to be, even if it's not going well, there's still a lot of learning that takes place. There's still a lot of self-understanding that is gained by setting out on the intention of doing a practice or shifting your practices around how you work with your emotions. And clearly with certain mental health challenges, people have very, 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 very different experiences with this, given where they're starting from and physiological factors that are outside of their own control and those sorts of things. So just being gentle with oneself through this process, I think, is so important too, because it is not always clear. And when you have that ambiguity, or when you feel like you're not getting clarity, that can feel very challenging and often is one of the reasons why people stop their goals and stop their habits. So really trying to be okay with the ambiguity piece and it not being clear, and you're not going to get it right all the time. And that's okay too. And so how do you then continue through the process without shutting down? And I think LaShawn mentioned something earlier that makes sense here, and that's the piece of doing something that is kind of within your line of joy, or I don't know exactly how you said it, but you're not going to try to do something that is completely out of the realm of something that you wouldn't like, for instance, but doing something that's in the realm of how do you make this practice joyful? How do you make this practice something you actually want to do? And how do you start incredibly small with making a behavioral adjustment? And when I say incredibly small, I think of like the most micro level shift. So for instance, if I want to sit with my emotions more, I want to take that back 1,000 layers and usually go through a process of talking through what that means with a coach or a counselor. And then finally getting to a space of, okay, that means I'm going to schedule 2 times this week for 5 minutes each, and I'm going to check in with myself on my emotions then. Even maybe making that smaller, 30 seconds each. Starting to build that habit, it needs to be very, very, very small. And so that just tidbit of information with habit building can also be applied to other New Year's resolutions and New Year's goals too. But we wanted to start the new year with this topic on sitting with your emotions, because it is something that comes up so much, and we don't have as many skills or strategies that are typically talked about with that specific modality or specific idea of sitting with one's emotions. So I think this is one of the challenges and hopes for the new year as people shift through the changing tides, that they will be able to continue to work with this, which will help them weather the more difficult times in their lives throughout the year. And the hopeful times too. I want to highlight one more thing, and with the hopeful times, and sometimes we run away from our good emotion, or not good. I don't want to say that. Let me take that out. Sometimes we run away from emotions that may naturally feel more positive, joy, happiness, contentment, these types of things, because it's either something from our childhood we were told we couldn't have, or something from our adulthood that it just doesn't align with the culture, or there's so many different things that keep us from accessing those emotions too. So how can you be open to those more positive emotional states, such as joy and happiness? What does that look like about the joy and happiness? It's also sitting with those, not pushing those aside, and being able to feel those with a level of contentment too. So that's just an example of sitting with joy. Well, Sean, what do you have to say now?
There were so many things that you said that resonated with me, especially when you said the thing about not worrying about getting it right. And I want to flip it and say, you can't get it wrong. If we can hold that mindset of I'm a work in progress, I'm never finished, I'm evolving and changing. And we can really hold that mindset when we are approaching personal development. It can really help with lightening that burden or that pressure of being perfect or reaching the finish line, because my experience has been that there is no finish line. There could be a series of finish line, but it's never really like you're done. So keeping that in mind, that work in progress, you can't get it wrong, and you're doing a great job, you know, and keeping that encouragement. I love what you said about sitting with emotions that we would interpret as positive, like joy, excitement, hopefulness. A lot of people might be reluctant to really appreciate and sit with hopefulness. One thing that I've heard around that is, I don't want to get my hopes up. It'll be worse if I'm really excited about this and it doesn't end up the way I want it to, or, you know, holding back on really feeling that joy and really experiencing excitement because you're afraid that you might be disappointed, I think is something that can rob us of really sitting with and experiencing those emotions. So I'm really glad you brought that up. I think that's so important too. And the other thing that comes to mind about the, you know, that you said that I think is also really important and has to do with, you know, what you said about baby steps and habits. I think it's important to understand that when we are establishing a new habit, it's not unusual for us to go back on old habits or to go two steps forward and three steps back. That's part of the process. And again, I want to bring back the idea that we are works in progress, that we are changing and evolving, and things that worked in one situation, we might find don't work in another situation. And if we can hold that in our mind, that idea that I could be surprised about the way that I react to that behavior, I can be surprised about how I handle certain situations. If we can hold that in our mind, that we can be surprised, that we might not be as predictable as we think, and really hold that in our mind for ourselves and for our loved ones and the people that we interact with, if we can understand that people are changing and our needs change and our level of understanding changes, and really just lean into that and accept that, I think that is also a form of sitting with one's feelings. And I think there's an acceptance there, and there's also an allowing there. So you're accepting what is, what's emerging, and you're allowing what is and what is emerging. And you can move with the course of your emotions. You can move with the course of the changes and learn from it and take the stance of curiosity. And that could make it easier for you to get into a more ebb and flow of life and not be so resistant to it. Because I think resistance can cause suffering. And one thing that, you know, I strive to do as a coach and just as an individual is to help, you know, ease suffering. And I think resistance can really bring about suffering. So those are things that came up in my mind as you were talking, Erin. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I just think now maybe to circle in on a coaching nugget of wisdom. And as a segue into doing that and your point on resistance and how that can cause suffering, I think that's an important point to make, because it's not that we are always saying, oh, you have to feel great all the time, right? That's not what's happening here in this conversation. But what we are trying to do, like you mentioned, is lessen the suffering, lessen some of the pain, and also through that process, be open to the joy and the happiness as well. And so I guess with that, I would go back to just the way to maybe consider processing some emotions when you sit with them, get to a quiet space and close your eyes and really get in touch with your breathing and listen to your breathing. And once you notice that rhythm of your breathing, start to label the emotions you're feeling and then pick out a couple words and tend to those words specifically. I'm feeling angry, for example. Well, how can I tend to that right here? Part of it is letting it be, and maybe it needs to grow and bubble up a little bit more. Maybe I need to create movement from that anger by drawing a picture about it or writing about it, for example. And then I want to find a way to let that go and find a way for it to move through me. Maybe that's, you know, throwing the drawing away or going on a walk, but letting that energy move through me so it's not stuck. So that's a three-pronged approach that I would suggest for sitting with challenging emotions.
Wonderful. I love that. And I would like to add to that an invitation to find out what modalities, maybe even, you know, using that three-pronged approach that Erin explained, and or maybe just looking for other ways that you can incorporate the practice of sitting with your emotions, learning about your emotions, and the course of emotions, and find out, you know, what works for you. And maybe do like an experiment where 1 week you do one thing and another week you do another thing or something like that. So find the modality that works for you. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.